It also introduces the issue of venetoclax in the non-del17P patient. Right now, that's what the indication is after ibrutinib. I know in a weird way, just seeing all things happening in oncology and CME, it kind of reminds me what just happened with the anti-EGFR TKI osimertinib, which, you know, came in initially thinking about T790 recurrence, and now they do this upfront trial, and it, you know, is better than the upfront therapy. What do we know about venetoclax and just your typical CLL? And do you see the potential integration of venetoclax and ibrutinib and chemotherapy in a curative strategy?
Absolutely. I think this is where the field is headed, but clearly is not limited to 17p deletion. You know, we have really old data with antisense BCL2 that it worked, and we didn't just look at 17p. It was a cumbersome, non-good drug. We had a previous to venetoclax was an earlier drug that was actually in late-stage clinical trials in combination with chemotherapy, but it also caused thrombocytopenia. So that drug went away in favor of venetoclax. But we have a lot of data with chemotherapy, chemoimmunotherapy, and anti-BCL2. So if you start with chemotherapy, debulk, and then start venetoclax, that's one strategy. Avoiding chemotherapy altogether with ibrutinib and venetoclax and an anti-CD20. So there's a number of studies in the pipeline looking at that combination. And I think if you can imagine ibrutinib, venetoclax, anti-CD20, getting MRD negativity, and then maybe stopping and seeing how long the duration of remission will be, you can start in those trials, the venetoclax, after a couple months so that you get around the tumor lysis syndrome problem. So I think we're creating exactly this road to either long-term remission, if not cure, whether we start with a couple rounds, two or three cycles of chemo to debulk, or just go right in with the ibrutinib. But venetoclax is clearly, just like ibrutinib, started out at 17p, but it clearly is not destined just to be in that niche.
You know, it's interesting. We're starting to see venetoclax pop up in unusual places, myeloma, AML, and mantle cell, which I was going to ask you about. But I was interviewing Sashi Kumar about this, and he was talking about some kind of assay that was being developed to actually look at BCL2 levels or something. And I'm just kind of curious if you know anything about that, but also sort of biologically, because it seems like CLL is the only place where you really see tumor lysis. And you're like, why is that?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's this whole literature on, is the cell primed to die? And so the BCL2 network is quite complicated. Obviously, the cell has to control pretty tightly whether it's going to die or not. And so there's a whole range of BCL2 family proteins that interact. And there are assays looking at, is the cell primed to die or not? And will BCL2 inhibition push it over the cliff? The obvious place where venetoclax should work is follicular lymphoma, which is 14-18 translocation, driven by BCL2. And yet there, it works, but not nearly as well as it does in CLL. So there are other factors, and we actually had some lab work looking at that in follicular and why it's resistant. It has to do with changes in levels of the other BCL2 family proteins. So when it works, it's great. When it doesn't work, there are strategies you can see coming forward that maybe we have to hit MCL1 or BIM, or BIM, which is another BCL2 family. So there's a number of factors that will allow us, I think, if, as Dr. Kumar was mentioning, these assays come about, that maybe we can look at the whole BCL2 family and say this person needs venetoclax alone, this one needs venetoclax plus another BCL2 family inhibitor. And so ultimately we can work on that cell death pathway, which is separate from saying I'm going to combine it with a cell proliferation pathway like ibrutinib.
So that's fascinating. I didn't know you actually see responses in FL to venetoclax?
There are. It's not that high, but it does work.
Wow, interesting.
Yep.